Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. Marion and I live in East Tawas, and what we'd like to share with you is, in my life, living in the small farming community of Pinconning, a lot like your own here, and I'd just like to take you back about 15 years ago in my life. Married my high school sweetheart, had two daughters. My oldest daughter was deaf, so that kind of put a crimp in our perfect plan, but we dealt with it. We got very involved in her education, and you know, I'll be honest, at the time I thought I was a pretty darn good Catholic. I went to church most of the time, you know, on vacation. Well, you're on vacation, you know, you don't have to go to Mass on vacation, do you? Didn't go to confession, hadn't been in 25 years, because you know what? Me and Jesus, we're buds. I do something wrong, I can just tell Jesus, and, you know, I'll try harder next time not to do that. You know, we're buds. I can just tell him. I don't need to go to confession. That's for older Catholic people. Didn't pray the rosary. That's for older Catholic women. Men don't pray the rosary. They don't pray the chaplet. Now, you know, breaking open the Bible, I never did that at home. We didn't do it at home. They did it every Sunday at church. Why would I do it at home? And he tells me what's in there and how to understand it. So I don't need to open the Bible at home, do I? Then let's throw in a couple Playboys. You know, that's all right. It's not really pornography. It's just something to get the motor running for your wife, right? So I think I'm a good Catholic. Well, brothers and sisters, I didn't even know really in our faith what the word lukewarm meant. But I'll tell you what the word lukewarm means from the book of Revelation. Chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. I know your works. They are neither cold nor hot. Would that they were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. And I have to tell you, brothers and sisters, I was on the highway to hell drinking the cocktail of life that I had mixed. And I thought I was good to go. And that road to hell is wide and everybody's on it and they're having a ball. And I had no clue. Well, that summer in August, my brother and I had owned our family grocery store business with a hardware. And he had a barbecue at his house for the managers. And, you know, every barbecue, you have a few beers. Well, I had a few beers. And then the next morning, we had to go to Mass because my first wife, high school sweetheart Karen, her father had passed away the previous year, and it was a Mass for him, and it was at 8 o'clock. So we go to St. Anne's Parish in Linwood, Michigan, and I don't feel good. Self-inflicted, get in, get on the kneeler, and then it started to happen. Heart starts racing, get hot, feel like I'm in a blackout, like I'm going down. I felt horrible, and I felt stupid, because I had done it to myself. Well, and I was so lukewarm, I knew so little about my faith, that I start getting these, you know, talking in my head. Hey, Tom, you don't need to feel like this. Why do you feel like this? Just get up and walk out, you'll feel great. You don't need to feel like this. Why do you feel like this? Over and over. And I'm just praying, oh, Lord, please, just get me through this. Just get me through this. Because you know what? I didn't pray. I prayed if I needed something, if something was bad. When my daughter was born deaf, I prayed. But I didn't pray every day. I didn't give Thanksgiving prayer. I only prayed when I needed something. Well, I prayed then, oh, Lord, just get me through this. You know why? My pride. The only thing that kept me in that pew was my pride. Because if I got up and walked out, they'd know that Tom screwed up and he had too many beers last night and he doesn't feel good. Well, the whole Mass that went on. Heart's racing, feels like I'm in a blackout, and these voices. Just get up and walk out, Tom. Just get up and walk out. You just walk out that door, you'll feel great. I'm thinking this is just my conscience. I'm figuring it all out. I got this under control. I'm just having a little panic attack. Well, I made it through Mass, and I was so embarrassed, I didn't even tell my wife. And I'm like, boy, that was so stupid. I'll never do that again. Well, the next Sunday, I go to Mass. Nothing to drink. Walk in, get on the kneeler. Guess what? Heart starts racing. I get hot as can be, feel like I'm going to pass out. and all those voices come back in my head. Tom, you don't need to feel like this. Just get up and walk out. Just get up and walk out. You walk out those doors and you'll feel great. You don't need to feel like this. Why do you feel like this? Again, oh Lord, just get me through Mass. Please, just get me through this. You know, I'm just thinking I'm having panic attacks. Well, I'm still too embarrassed to tell my wife because I caused this. Well, it went on week after week after week after week. And about 6-7 weeks into it, I'm the confirmation sponsor for my nephew. Suit and tie on, right up in the front of the church. And boy, this time he threw everything at me. I felt about 110 degrees, heart's racing. I'm going down any minute. And finally, I just got to the point after about 6 or 7 weeks, and I just said, Lord Jesus Christ, free me from this affliction, and I will serve you. And immediately, I got hit with a cold of Arctic air that hit me from my head to my toes, and I was literally shaking, and it was gone. Never had it again. Well, I told my wife about it then, but you know what happens when Jesus lights the fire? They needed Eucharistic ministers. I will, so will my wife. Well, immediately Karen went to the priest and said, hey, don't let him sign me up for anything else. You know, ask me first. And she didn't really want to do it, but she did, and she loved it. Then they needed a lector. Me, I'll lector. I'll be glad to. Oh, yeah, what do I need to do? And then they came to me, and they said, you know, Tom, would you consider being on the RCIA team? And I'm like, I don't know anything. How can I be on the RCIA team? Sister Jean Therese said, don't worry, Tom, we'll teach you. We just need a man on the team. And RCIA in our church at that time was every week all year. My wife wasn't crazy about that because it was this weekly commitment. So every week I go, I'm learning. And I'd come home and she'd say, oh, what'd you learn this week? And I'd say, oh, you won't believe what I found out. And I'm starting to tell her all these things about our faith. I didn't even know we had a catechism. I just didn't. So I'm learning, and at the same time, I go to tune in my favorite sports talk radio, 1440 AM in Saginaw, to get the Tigers score. Guess what? It's Ave Maria Catholic Radio. He hit me with everything. Everywhere I turned, he was there. So I start listening to Catholic radio, and you know, as like most men, nobody knew. I wasn't going to tell the other guys I'm listening to Catholic radio. But I couldn't listen to anything else because every time I turned it on, I learned something. I had no idea. I had no idea about my Catholic faith. So this is going on now for 2 years. The fire got lit, and I'm learning, and everything's going on. And then this past year will be 13 years, September 5th. My high school sweetheart, the wife of my two daughters, my oldest daughter was deaf. She was going to graduate from Madonna University 9 months later and get married to her deaf fiancé. And my wife had a brain aneurysm that ended her life. And I have to tell you that I never once said, God, why did you do this to me? Why did you take Karen? Because over those 2 years, he got me to realize that I needed to love him more than I loved her. Because God needed to come first. And all I did was thank him for every moment of every day that we had together. And for my two daughters. And I did. It was a blessing. I mean, it hurt really bad. I can tell you, the grocery store was about a 10-minute drive to work. And I cried all the way to work. And I was strong all day. And then I cried all the way home. And I've talked to Marion about this, and I didn't know if I was going to share it, but we have a little more time tonight, so I'm going to. And during that time, when my wife wasn't going to make it, they did emergency surgery when she had the brain aneurysm. Gift of Life came to us, and she wasn't going to make it, and we made a decision to give the Gift of Life. Well, after she passed, both daughters stayed home from college for a couple weeks, and I got this book from the Gift of Life, and it was called The Next Place. And really what it is, it's colorful pictures with one sentence on the bottom. And it really talks about heaven, but it can't say that because it can't be religious. and it was called The Next Place. So anyway, this is about a week after her funeral, and we were staying up late at night. We're looking at pictures and reminiscing, and I go to bed. It's about 1:30 in the morning, and I open the book up, and I'm like, I'll look through this book and see what it's all about. Well, I got probably a third of the way through the book, and I got to this page, and it had light blue neon hearts on the page, and the one line on the bottom said, I will know the joy of solitude, but I will never be alone. And then suddenly, the hearts started to light up, just like your heart's beating, and it just lit up the room. And I'm like, you know, you haven't slept, you haven't eaten, you're not really seeing this. So I put the book down, and I run out, and I get my youngest daughter, Sarah, who had normal hearing, and I said, Sarah, come here. She says, what's the matter? Just come here. So we went back to my room, and I got in bed, and I said, here, look through the book and tell me what you see. So she did, and she got to that page, and I just said, oh, Lord, please, you know, I can see this. Let her see this. Though I will know the joy of solitude, I will never be alone. And these neon hearts are just lighting the room up. I mean, just, it's almost blinding. And she saw it. And both of us are in tears, and I said, we got to go get Mindy. So we shut the book, and we went out, and she could see something was going on, and Mindy's like, what's the matter? And we said, just come here, Mindy. So she comes in. All three of us jump into bed. We give her the book, and we said, Mindy, just look at the book and tell us what you see. Well, she got to that page, and she couldn't see it. We could, and she couldn't. And we just prayed, Lord, please, let her see this. I know Karen wants her to see this. And then she did. It was probably a minute. It seemed like 5 minutes to us at the time, but she could see it. And I get chills today just thinking about it, because it was like every beat of your heart, it lit up, this light blue light in the room. Well, we praised God. We turned every light off in the house. We walked around the house, and it lit the house up until we couldn't stay awake any longer. And I just told my daughters, I said, do you realize what God has done for us? Your mom must have pleaded so greatly to show us a sign of where she's at. And you know, most people lose a loved one and they don't get any of that. But that's why I'm here talking to you tonight. Because I really feel that she died to save me, so that I would complete the works that he has in store for me. Well, the next day I went out, and my daughters each got a Catholic Bible. We went to the store and we started talking about our faith. And I didn't open the book again. And then I came home about a month after, and I had a really bad day at work. And I opened the book up again, and it happened again. And I've never opened it since, and I never will. So at that point, I'm like, what do I do, Lord? I mean, I was really in pain, but yet I was just so thankful for all the time that we had together and my two daughters. And she's getting married. My deaf daughter's getting married. She's actually going to get married. It's great. And she's graduating from college. What a blessing. And I'm praying, you know, do you want me to be a priest? What do you want me to be? I don't know. Well, I'd been doing junior achievement at our elementary school for a number of years. And I knew the secretary there, Marion. And all I knew about Marion is that she had went through some pretty bad suffering in her life. And so I would see her when I would check in at the office before I went out to do junior achievement. Well, we were working together after my wife died, and it wasn't even a year after, we're working on a school bond. Our school at Pinconning was 54 years old and never had any renovations. It had fire code violations. It was close to having closing. So we're working on the bond proposal committee, and it's like, you know what, Lord, I got to get involved in some things. I got to stop, you know, just talking about stuff and getting involved. So I'm at those meetings, and one meeting we were at Marion's house, and we just got talking afterwards, and pretty soon she's telling me about her son Jared, who had died at 2 years old of cancer, and I'm telling her about my wife Karen, who had died, and we knew something was going on. So my father had myasthenia gravis, muscle disorder, and they had a place in Florida in a park, and they were going to go down, but he couldn't drive all the way. And I said, you know what, I'll drive your vehicle down, I'll open it up, you fly down, and I'll pick you up. So they did that, and one night my dad had went to bed, and I wanted to make sure he couldn't hear, and he had his hearing aids out. I said, Mom, I got to talk to you. I said, I really got to talk to you about something. She said, what? You can talk to me about anything. And I said, I don't know how to say this. She said, well, what do you mean, Tom? I said, well, you know, I've been working on the bond proposal, and I said, you know, Marion Lefebvre, she's working on it, and I said, we've gotten talking, and I said, I really have feelings for her. And I said, I've already went to my priest, Father Tom, and Sister Jean, and talked to him. I said, I feel bad, but I feel good. And I said, I really have feelings for her. And she looked at me, and she said, oh, Tom, she said, you have no idea the weight you just lifted. And I'm like, what? Because I'm not sure what my mom's going to tell me. I said, Mom, what are you talking about? She said, Tom, after Karen's funeral, I closed my eyes and I prayed all the way home. And she said, your dad said to me, what is Tom going to do now? And she said, Tom, I prayed all the way home. And she said, when I got right to the corner to turn to go to our house, I opened my eyes and there was Marion's house. And the Lord said to me, he will marry her. And she said, I didn't tell your father, I didn't tell anybody. And she says, you have no idea the weight you just lifted. And I said, she hasn't got a chance. That was my confirmation. So with that said, I'd like to introduce my wife, Marion, who'd like to tell you a little bit about her life.
Anybody know about those? So first of all, thank you very much for coming out tonight. Wow, what a great place. I grew up in a farming community. I know how to thin beets, hoe beans, pick pickles, change cultivator teeth. Been there, done all that. My dad was a farmer then. So I had just want to tell you, I had a fantastic childhood growing up on the farm. There were seven of us kids, plus a great uncle that lived with us. All the men were widowers, so they all passed away at the farmhouse under my mom's care. And so that's kind of what we were, farm life. Just fantastic. Rope swings, hard work. I'm not saying we didn't have hard work, because we did. But tonight I'm going to talk a little bit about what brings me here tonight. And so I just want to tell you that I had it all. I had this fantastic upbringing on the farm. My parents were fantastic, had a great high school career. I was an athlete and had a lot of success there. Went to college, went to Ferris, and got to play some sports there, and married my high school sweetheart. And he was a car dealer. His dad was. Well, he became one after he graduated from school, too. And we traveled the world, went all kinds of trips through Chevrolet and Pontiac and gifts and resorts and cruises and all kinds of fun things, had it all. And so after 9 years of marriage, we decided we would start a family. So that tells you who's driving the ship, right? It wasn't God. There was a place for him. His mom was I left my Catholic faith to go to the Methodist church with them. And I was really lukewarm. When I was out of college and working. So I just, you know, I went for it. And my mother-in-law had a faith experience in Israel, and she became a born-again Christian. So are you saved? Are you saved? Do you know Jesus? You know, I'm like, oh, my God. Okay. But anyway, I did go along with her to, you know, some women's conferences and things like that. So I always kind of stayed in touch with God, you know. I mean, I couldn't help it. I have two sisters that are lay ministers. My mom went to an all-girls Detroit Catholic school. So faith was always, religion, faith, and politics were always discussed at home. As my mom said, anything else is just gossip. So we always talked religion and politics because those are the two things that can affect your life the most. So that was true. So anyway, all's well. We have a family. We have a daughter and a son. And build my dream home in the middle of 54 acres and gorgeous woods. And I really liked God's plan for me. Just loved it. Man, he is a good, God, you know? You know what I'm saying? You know, you're just like, I couldn't be any happier. And then my husband went on a business trip, and he came back in, it was the spring of 1994, and the worst words in a marriage happened. I'm having an affair. So, just leveled me. It was like a massive cloud came over our family, and but he said, I'm having an affair, but I want to end it. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that's good. Do I have a say? So I said, okay, let's go to counseling. Let's see if we can work through this. So we went to counseling in Midland through Family Life Radio. It's a Christian based radio station over there, and they also had a counseling center. So we're going to counseling. So the summer's going by, but I had a lot of fear, you know, fear for my marriage, fear for my family, my children. You know, is this what's going to happen here? It started to kind of wear on me, you know, fear of the unknown, fear of money, you know, am I going to have enough money for whatever? So we're going through counseling all summer, and then we had a trip to Disney, and at that time, my little guy was 22 months, and my daughter was 4, and so we decided to take her and leave him back. So Grandma and Grandpa got him, and we went down to Disney, and when we got back in December, he was limping. So to make a long story short, doctor visits, inflammation of the hip, ends up in the hospital a couple days before Christmas. They did a hip aspiration, really couldn't find anything, put a PICC line in him. He got, antibiotics through. And the day after Christmas, he had a lot of pain, so we headed down to Detroit. And that evening, they put him under. They were going to do some surgery on the hip to take a look at it, and they felt a massive tumor on his left kidney. And he was diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma cancer. That was tough. That's a tough thing to hear. I thought I heard really tough in the spring. This was tough. So we just dove in. You know, here's the treatment. He's got a 5% chance of making it. He had a big tumor in his left kidney, a secondary tumor on the side of his head, microtumor in the lung, and he really battled. He was just a trooper, and I wish I would have half of his courage. Excuse me. Thanks for understanding. So, our life just became about blood counts and chemo side effects and all of that. And finally that June, he, at the age of 2 years and 2 months, he passed away. So now we're all trying to heal in the family. My daughter is 4, you know, the undertaker takes him away and she's like, Mom, I'm hungry. It's like life kind of just goes on, you know. Thank God for other children. So we're working through yet another summer of toughness, and my husband says, I want a divorce. I never ended the affair all while we were in counseling, all while you were at the hospital with the baby. She came over. I love her. Then Satan attacks. You're not good. You're not beautiful. You can't keep a husband. You're this, you're that. You know how he can attack us and tell us what we are when that's not who we really are. But, you know. So he told me he has an apartment and he's leaving. And he did. 2 days before Christmas. So it was a tumultuous year. So I don't know why he felt he needed to tell me she was over in our marriage bed and she was there, but I guess that made him justify why, you know, he had to move out. So, of course, we're in a small town, and the gossip begins. And it was mean. It was hurtful. Most of it was untrue. And I say this because I also was capable of gossip. And I knew that 90% of that what was said, oh, he left because the baby, you know, passed away. No one knew he was having an affair and that we were in no one knew that except for my in-laws. I didn't even tell my own parents until he moved out. So I say this because it's a lesson I learned from this, is to be on the receiving end of that kind of stuff is very painful. So we were reading a book called 1 Minute to Go, and he said there's the gateway to the mouth, and check three things. Is it true before you say it? Is it going to help before you say it? Do you know what I'm saying? And I can't remember the third one. It's leaving my mind. But anyway, very, very painful. Some people actually relished in the pain. You know, we had money. We were a small town. You know, I didn't think I ever treated anybody badly or snooty. I remembered my humble beginnings, and I just felt, you know, but it didn't matter. So it started to set in. The storm's brewing, anger. These are the things I'm feeling: betrayal, abandonment, jealousy, bitterness, embarrassment. I was so embarrassed in our community, you know, and it's just like there's just this huge, huge storm is raging, and revenge. I mean, I never thought I was capable, but I was capable of thinking of murder. And you watch the movie, the TV show Snapped, and whatever those other ones were, where someone just loses it. I mean, I'm thinking, like, where could I get a gun? How could I do it? You know, and I'm thinking, my gosh, I've got a four-year-old. I can't do that. You know, thank God. Thank God he knocked some sense into me. But I had no idea of what I was capable of. God saved me from that. And they flaunted the affair in town. They came to, you know, I was a high school, I'm a high school volleyball coach. I was for 30-some years, and her daughter played on the JV team. I coached varsity. I had to see her. I had to see her at games. He would sit with her. You know, it was just like always in my face, and I was just like, I just wish you guys would just die. I just wish you would go away. I just wish you were dead. You know what I mean? It was awful. And so finally, divorce is over. Took us a while. Some assets to divide and things, and of course he hid a ton and blah blah blah. So it's done. And I look up and I'm like, now what am I gonna do? I haven't worked in my field for 15 years. I haven't, you know, I've just got my daughter who, what am I supposed to just drop her at daycare now that you know that things have changed? And so I'll tell you what I started to do. Can you see this? Can you see that? It says poison. This is what I started to do. I started to drink the poison, hoping they would die. Do you understand what I mean by that? Every day, every morning I woke up, opened my bottle of poison, tossed it back. I mean, I was living over here okay. I was a secretary at the elementary. I was coaching. I was a single mom. I sold my big home. I got us into a smaller home. Financially, I was okay. But every day I woke up thinking about them. And I hated them. And every day I drank the poison, hoping they would die. And what happened? I got sicker. Me. I'm drinking the poison, getting sicker. They're moving on in their happy little life. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I assumed it was because Satan just puts it all there. He just puts it all there. Look at them. Aren't they happy? Boy, you know, she's going on that trip now that you used to take. Oh, they're going skiing? Oh, yeah, they're going out west. Oh, they're doing it. And it's like, I was sick. But I functioned, you know. If my daughter heard me saying this tonight, she wouldn't believe it. I'm not sure if my sisters would either, and I have three sisters, and we're best friends. But they were on my mind daily. They consumed my mind. I hated them. I woke up thinking about them. I went to bed thinking about them. I think I'll take a shot of poison just before I go to bed. That way they'll really die. And I was getting worse. And then my sister invited me. Actually, after the divorce, I immediately went back to the Catholic Church and went home, much to my mother's delight. But I really felt home there, and I had my daughter sacramentalized, and I sat with my family at church instead of my ex's family. So it was a fantastic thing. My sister says, why don't you come to a parish mission? There's this great priest that's going to talk. And I said, okay, I'll go. So I go, and three beautiful nights of speaking, but I can only remember one thing. He said, are you stuck in unforgiveness? I'm like, yeah, I'm really stuck. He says, this is what I want you to do. When the priest raises, and I don't know if we have any, whoops, I lost my button. Oh, when the priest raises the bread, name the problem. Give it to God. Here's my divorce, Lord. When he raises the cup, name the emotions. Here, Lord, here's my anger, my bitterness, my jealousy, my pride, my embarrassment, my hurt. Here, Lord, take it. You know, like he says, like it's like in a garbage bag, okay? So here it is. Here's all my things. Here's my garbage, Lord. Here's my anger and bitterness. You can have that. Here's my jealousy and embarrassment. You can have that, Lord. Here's my murder, my revenge. All right? You can have that. Do you know what I'm saying? And I go, take it to the foot of the cross.
Mentally,
I would take it. Here, Lord. There's a big crucifix up here. I would say, you did that for me. And I'm telling you that's not good enough because I got this. I can handle this. I don't need you. I mean, I need you, but I don't like need you to help me. And then, like, it's like after Mass, I would go back up, snatch the bag, and take it back home. Because that's where I was comfortable living in. Drinking my poison, being in my anger, being in my bitterness. So, like, I didn't really give it to him. You know what I'm saying? It's like Father John Ricardo said, we were at his parish a couple weeks ago. He says, we're hoarders. We want to hang on to that because we're justified in that. So every Mass, here it is, Lord. I didn't miss it. I'd never been so focused on a consecration in those 6 months as I had then. Here it is, Lord. Here it is. This is my divorce. Here's my pain. Help me. Take it back. And then finally, he's like, I'm like, Lord, here, take it. He goes, I want it, Marion. Can I have it back? No. You're giving it to me? Give it to me. I did this for you. I opened my back for you. I put wounds in my hands and my feet for you. Is that not good enough? You have to live in that muck and you have to live in that mire? You're not open to anything I have for you. You're not open for any of my graces and any of the plans I have for you because you're in your own little space, in your own little place, because you want to be there because you are justified in being there. And so one day I said, actually I went home one day and I laid prostrate in front of my crucifix at home and I said, Lord, if you mean this, if you're for real about this, then please take it so I can move on. And I wasn't, like, really, like, mean or, I'm just not that kind of person, you know what I mean? But I just knew it wasn't me inside. What people saw wasn't what was inside. And I'm finding out as I pray with people in Unbound, most of what you see outside is the bloom. But what's at the root, we don't see of each other. So we always have to be thinking about each other. We just want to hang on. So one Sunday, here comes, there goes the bread. Here it is, Lord, here it is. Here's my emotions. I give it to you. And I heard clearly, I'm not giving them back. Praise God. And I felt a freedom that I'd never, ever felt in my life. Do you know what I mean? It just left. He took it. I let him have it. It was awful of me to think that he couldn't take it. I mean, he died on the cross, so, you know. Oh, my gosh, I just couldn't believe how good I felt, how much better I felt. I just praised and thanked him. And I'm going to tell you, it wasn't a real happy, well, just put it this way, guys, I didn't really care for you. Do you understand? I didn't really care for men. Not that I hated them, I didn't talk to them. I had all kinds of male coaches that were my friends and that type of thing, but I really wasn't looking for a date. So a couple weeks after that, I met Tom, and I was actually open to having a conversation with him and actually having talking about real feelings. But I'm gonna bring Unbound into this a little bit, because I think you're gonna have an Unbound conference here in February, and we are involved. Tom and I are involved in Unbound, and Unbound is basically five keys to freedom. And you learn the five keys to live free. And so we just learned this, and Tom went to this seminar, and I think I didn't even come down for that day, but he came back and he said, Marion, this lady talked about Unbound, and you can't believe it. You can't believe this ministry. It's fantastic. It's five keys. It's praying through the keys, and it's getting rid of the junk. And so now I'm like, and so I read the book, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me. Because in Unbound, you find the emotion, and you cast it out. It's a deliverance ministry, but it's not, you know, it's not an exorcism. Do you know what I'm saying? In the name of Jesus, I renounce the spirit of revenge, and I wanted to leave right now in the name of Jesus, in the power of Jesus. So it's kind of just a fabulous ministry, and it's just praying with people. But what I learned from Unbound is this, and I went through a long prayer session because there was other people I needed to forgive. You know, there was people I needed to forgive, but this is what I learned. Forgiveness is a decision, not a feeling. Forgiveness takes you and the power of God. It doesn't take anybody else. I'm like, I can do that. Because until I did this a year ago, I still hadn't forgiven them. I mean, God took away a lot of my stuff, but there was no forgiveness. I certainly didn't pray for them. Forgive us our trespasses as what? We forgive those who trespass against us. In other words, Lord, give me mercy, forgive me, but I'm not going to give them any. And it says it in Scripture, you will be judged on how you judged. And I'm like, oh, this is tough stuff. So say this with me. Forgiveness is a decision. Not a feeling. Because there's some people who haven't talked in 30 years. I talked to my mom, my sister, my brother, that friend. I mean, I know someone who hasn't talked to her sister in years because mom said she could have that really good teapot, and when mom died, my sister took it, and now I'm mad. I'm not going to talk to her for the rest of my life. We risk our salvation by not asking for forgiveness. We risk it because we're living in something that we can't, you know, you can't be open to what he has for you. But I'm going to stay in this. Why? Because I deserve it. Because they did me wrong. But forgiveness doesn't mean what they did to you is right. Of course what they did to me was wrong. You know? Of course it did. But am I going to risk my salvation waiting for an apology? You can't. We're talking about eternal heaven. We're talking about the room he prepared for us, the mansion. That's the one we're talking about. And it's like, how am I going to ask that? How am I going to forgive him? That's impossible. Yes, it is. With us, it's impossible. But with God, what? All things are possible. Can I do it? No. Can God, if I ask God to join with me, can he do it through me? Yes. Praise God. Reconciliation takes two people in the power of God. Now, my daughter has forgiven her father. I mean, he walked out. The kid just lost her brother, and then her dad walks out. She loved her father. Four. She can remember today. And we went through this, and we talked about it. And she has lunch with him once a week, and they talk. And there's forgiveness there. But I don't know if they'll ever reconcile, because I don't know if he'll ever say to her, I'm sorry. But I told her, I said, honey, you can't live in that muck and that mire. You can't wait for that. So forgive and then be open to what God has to say to you and where he wants to take you. Because can we control anything they do? Can I control what they're doing, what they're going through? Can I even, I can't. So why would I risk my salvation so I can stay angry and be justified in it? It's like saying, I'm not ready to forgive. I'm not ready to forgive yet. Well, you know what? You may drive home tonight and die. Reality. We've all been through that. The bad news of a car accident. So I would encourage you, if you're drinking the poison, like I am, I was, that you would take a minute or two, not tonight, or an hour, and just sit in quiet and say, Lord, who do I need to forgive so that I may be open to receive everything you have to give to me? It is so hard by ourselves, so hard. 6 years I drank the poison. I don't know why I'm not dead. I don't even know why I'm standing in front of you, but I just know one thing. Jesus is just utterly amazing how he works. So God gave me great mercy. He kept me alive so I could go through this, so I could come out on the other side. And I know had I not lost my son, I would be living the dream, doing our thing, kids would be doing this, and I know I wouldn't know him personally. I know I wouldn't have called on him. I had it too easy. So God gave me great mercy, and he gave me a great husband, a new husband. But I want to tell you, do you think I'm happy because I met him or because I met him? Where does your happiness come from? So don't count on each other. He's fantastic. I'm not gonna lie. But Jesus, he's got it all. And so if you have the opportunity to go through your Unbound conference, they'll take you through each key individually, and then usually toward the end or as things go on, you can call for a long prayer. We've prayed with people. You pray for about an hour and a half, and you just let it out. And I let it out with my long session, and I had to forgive this woman's mom. She lived with her. She watched her kids so her daughter could go and sleep with another man's wife who's down in the hospital, sleeping in a hospital chair as her son's dying of cancer. Can I say it any worse? Can I say it any worse? And I thought that never was up on my radar, that I needed to forgive her. But what mother would do that? That's my thought. You know what I mean? I would never do that. So hopefully, I'm not trying to make you sad. I'm trying to make you happy. A living free, out of the muck, out of the mire of unforgiveness. Because the beginning of all healing is forgiveness. And if you're feeling good in life and you got Jesus there and you've forgiven, use that Eucharist. Every Mass, if you have a son, a daughter, a friend, a child, lift them up. You know, we got family members, just all these young kids, these 30-somethings, not even darkening the door of a church. Came up through Catholic school. So I put them up there. Lord, my nieces and nephews who don't know you. And I put the emotion to it. It causes me deep sorrow and fear for their salvation. Do you know what I'm saying? Give him something every time. That is what is happening. It's the sacrifice of the Mass. We remember the sacrifice. Don't let it go to waste, ever. Always give him something. Always give him something that's just weighing us down, that's just like a brick on our shoulders. Give it to him. And don't take it back. I love to take the garbage bag back. But anyway, I thank you for listening. I hope I didn't, you know, I hope that you could feel and see that, you know, we go through tough things. We go through tough things. If we don't learn and use them for the greater glory of God, then we've missed the boat, especially of redemptive suffering. Use it. Unite it with them. Give it to them. Tell them, that's good enough for me. That whip on your back, that was good enough. That's good enough for me, Lord. I don't need any more. I get it. Because I didn't. You've been fantastic. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it very much. God bless you tonight. Oh, I wanted to tell you one thing. You have a gorgeous church. I had the opportunity to pray in there. It is beautiful. You've got a church on fire, I hear. You've got, you know, just things going on. There's so many dead wood parishes, and people just aren't alive and don't have that vigor for Christ, and we're called to be those disciples. And I, you know, hey, you guys were on TV, for crying out loud, CNN and stuff. Whoa. But it's beautiful. Keep it up. Love each other. Don't talk about each other. Love each other. Embrace each other. See the face of Jesus in everybody. We get to go to St. Lucia, to the prison. And these men are hurting. They have deep father wounds, alcoholism, you know, abuse, fornication. There's never a marriage. And no jobs. They're depressed, oppressed, suppressed. And, you know, to see the face of Jesus in those guys is just a gift. And we all have been wounded somehow. I mean, I was just living in la-la land, really, until I heard those words. So praise be to God. And I got what every parent wants. I got an angel in heaven, right? I know that for sure. Everybody wants their children to, you know, see the face of God. And I know my son has. Miss him dearly. 20 years this year he's been gone. And I'm just now getting it. Bless you.
Could you tell she was a coach? A very good coach. I just wanted to say that, you know, talking about Unbound, that's what brought us to Unbound, because we didn't go to a conference, but Jesus freed us. And because of that, I've went through a long prayer session, and it's amazing the simple things that come out that happen to us. There are really things that oppress you. When you're young, something happens. And when you're going through a prayer session, it's like, really? My dad and my brother were teasing me. You got to learn how to take a joke, Tom, when I was a kid. That's the kind of stuff that will come up, but that's an entry point. And when you pray through that, you seal off that entry point, and then it allows the graces of God to flow through you. I'm the president of Catholic Radio in Northern Michigan, and I just owned a grocery store. Now, that's really crazy to me, but it's only because I know what Catholic Radio did in my life. And once he freed me, the things that he has, we're all part of his grand plan. He's got a plan for each and every one of us, and it's all different. But what a shame if we don't receive the graces that he has in store for us so that we know what his plan is for us. And I just want to close with, it's actually out of chapter 12 of Luke, and it is verse 49. I came to cast fire upon the earth, and were that it already ablaze. Your parish here is ablaze, because I've heard lots of things about it. You crank out vocations, and that's because of you, and it's probably because of your prayers. And we all underestimate the power of prayer. It's amazing what prayer does if we trust it and if we give it to him. So just be the spark that ignites the blaze. Praying with somebody, offering to pray for them, you know, asking them to come back to Mass with you, inviting him to a talk, whatever it is, the Holy Spirit will prompt you. Just go with it. You know, being involved in Catholic Radio, Mother Angelica has this phrase, do the ridiculous so that God can do the miraculous. So always keep that in mind, because sometimes it feels a little ridiculous what you're going to say or out of love to someone, but you will be amazed what he can do with it. So I'd just like to thank you for inviting us here this evening, and God bless your parish and the work that you're doing, and it's just really been an honor for us to be here. Yes, and we've been on three mission trips on Lucia in a prison, in the cell blocks. That is the grace of God. And I have to tell you, and Marion said this earlier, we were scared, just like we didn't know what to say the first time we went in. That was when Adam Hoffman was with us. We didn't know what to say. I mean, what do you say to these guys? And it was amazing. I left there, and I was changed forever. It was like you see the face of Jesus in someone, because he said, when I was in prison, did you visit me? When I was in sick, did you come and visit me? When I was poor, were you there? Did you give me something to eat? I didn't do that a lot of the time. And so whatever you feel prompted to do, and it might just be that you're a great husband or mother or grandmother, whatever. But one thing I have learned, too, through prayer is spend less time talking to the grandkids and talking to him about the grandkids. And you'll see things happen that you won't believe. Thank you very much, and God bless.